Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to be looking at Market Street Associates v. General Electric Pension Trust. It's a case that really shows how contracts can be ticking time bombs. Sometimes they explode in unexpected ways.
Yeah, I like that analogy. This case is super important in contract law. It really gets down to the nitty-gritty of good faith and how that can get so complicated.
And we've got some really great primary source material for this deep dive, excerpts from the actual case brief, and we even have Judge Posner's full opinion. It's full of his classic sharp wit and analysis.
Yeah, his opinions are always so fun to read. He really makes the law come alive. What's interesting here is how it all boils down to just one paragraph in a lease. One paragraph. And it could mean millions and millions of dollars.
Crazy. So let's set the stage. It's 1968. JCPenney needs some cash to grow their business. So they make a deal with the General Electric Pension Trust. It's this thing called a sale and leaseback. Kind of a weird name, right?
It does sound weird, but it's actually a pretty common strategy, especially for companies that have a lot of valuable real estate. Basically, Penny sold a bunch of their properties to the pension trust and then immediately leased them right back. This gave them a ton of cash right away, but they could still use the properties.
Ah, okay. So they get the money and the property. Best of both worlds, at least for a little while. But then, fast forward to 1987, Market Street Associates enters the scene. They take over JCPenney's lease. Market Street wants to redevelop this property. But there's a catch. This little paragraph in the lease, paragraph 34, is about to cause some major problems.
Oh, yeah. Paragraph 34 was the sneaky little clause. It gave the lessee, in this case, Market Street, an option to buy back the property, but only under certain conditions. And of course, that buyback price was set back in 1968. So by the late 80s, it was way lower than what the property was actually worth. We're talking millions of dollars in potential profit here.
So Market Street sees this golden opportunity and they're ready to jump on it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another issue. They can't get financing for the redevelopment plans because they don't own the property outright.
Exactly. Lenders don't usually want to finance improvements on leased land. If the lease ends, their investment is gone. So for Market Street to get those big plans going, they needed to own the property.
Makes sense. So they reach out to the pension trust to try and work something out. But here's where the communication gets a little, well, murky. Market Street sends not one, but two letters to the pension trust. They ask about financing options pursuant to the lease, but they never actually mention paragraph 34. Or the buyback option. It's like they're avoiding the topic on purpose.
Yeah, it's very suspicious. And then on the pension trust side, they're practically silent. They take forever to respond to any calls or letters, like weeks and weeks. Then finally, they reject the financing requests. They say they only deal with loans over $7 million.
That's odd. Makes you wonder, right? Was the pension trust just being super slow and bureaucratic? Or was there something else going on? Were they truly clueless about paragraph 34? Or were they playing games and stalling? Tough to say.
Really is. All this unclear communication and potential for misunderstanding? Well, that's what sets us up for this whole legal battle. So the case goes to court. And the first judge actually sides with the pension trust. They grant what's called a summary judgment. It basically means they decided without a full trial.
Wow, really? They decided the whole thing right there. That seems a little strange. I mean, this is complicated stuff, right? Why would they rule without hearing all the evidence?
Well, legally speaking, a summary judgment happens when the judge thinks there's no real disagreement about the facts, and the law clearly says one side should win. Here, the judge felt Market Street hadn't acted in good faith, and that was enough to rule for the pension trust.
So even though Market Street technically did what the contract said, sent those letters, invoked paragraph 34, the judge still thought they were trying to trick the pension trust.
Yeah, exactly. The judge really didn't like that Market Street never actually mentioned paragraph 34 in those early letters. They asked for financing, sure, but they used vague terms like pursuant to the lease. The judge saw that as trying to take advantage of the pension trust, hoping they wouldn't notice.
Like they were setting a trap, hoping the pension trust wouldn't see it coming.
That's one way to look at it. And this goes right to the heart of what good faith means in the law. It's this idea that everyone in a contract should be honest and fair with each other, even if the actual words of the contract don't say that specifically.
So it's not enough to just follow the rules. You got to play fair, too. But good faith seems pretty hard to define, right? Like, how do you actually know what it means in real life?
Yeah, it's not always so clear cut. The law doesn't say you have to be perfect or tell the other side everything, but it does expect some honesty and effort when you're negotiating and working together. It's about not purposely taking advantage of someone's mistakes or ignorance.
So you can be tough, but not a total jerk.
Right. You can look out for yourself, but you can't intentionally mislead the other party. And that's where things get even more interesting. Because Marcus Street appeals that summary judgment. The case ends up in front of Judge Richard Posner. He's a legend, and his opinion on this case is a brilliant piece of legal thinking. It really throws a wrench into everything.
Judge Posner, he's the guy with the sharp wit and all those crazy analogies, right? I've heard he's like a rock star in the legal world. What did he say about this whole good faith thing?
Well, Judge Posner overturns the summary judgment. He sends the case back to the lower court for a real trial. He says that sometimes it's okay to use your knowledge to your advantage, but deliberately using someone's mistake against them, that's completely different. He actually compares it to theft. There's no benefit to society. It just makes everyone suspicious and distrustful.
I love how he just cuts through all the legal jargon. So he's basically saying you can be clever, but don't be a jerk.
Yeah, pretty much. And what's really smart is how he explains the difference between good faith before you sign a contract and after. Before you sign, you're supposed to be looking out for number one. But once it's signed, you gotta cooperate and be fair.
That does make sense. It's like, once you sign a contract, you're in a relationship. And relationships need trust and honesty.
Exactly. Judge Posner even uses this example of a requirements contract. Let's say a company agrees to buy all their widgets from one supplier. Now imagine the price of widgets goes way up. The buyer can't just order a ton more widgets just to sell them at a huge profit. That would be taking advantage, breaking the spirit of the deal.
So in Market Street's case, Judge Posner is saying we got to figure out what their real goal was. Were they really trying to get financing?
Mm-hmm.
Or were they just setting up this cheap buyback by using the pension trust's inattention?
Yep, and to figure that out, you need a trial. You got to look at everything, hear all the witnesses, try to understand what everyone was really thinking and doing. Was Market Street intentionally misleading? Or was the pension trust just super careless? These are questions you can't answer with a summary judgment.
Wow, this case really shows how important intentions are in contract law. It's not just about what's written down, it's about how people act and what they mean.
It is. It makes you think about how complicated these simple agreements can be. It's not just about laws, it's about how people treat each other in business. Should you be punished for your partner's mistakes? Can you be too smart for your own good? These questions matter way beyond this one case.
They do. And now I really want to know what happened at the trial. Did Market Street win and get that amazing price? Or did the pension trust manage to stop them?
Well, here's the thing. The case report we have actually ends with Judge Posner sending it back for a full trial. So we don't actually know the final outcome.
No, you're kidding. That's like ending a movie on a cliffhanger. But even without knowing who won, Judge Posner's opinion gives us so much to think about. This whole idea of good faith. Where's the line between being a smart negotiator and a deceiver? It's really fascinating.
It is, and it highlights how contract law isn't just about following the words on paper. It's about ethical standards and expectations in business. It's about making sure things are fair and trustworthy, even in tough deals like real estate.
So we've gone through this whole case, all the twists and turns and that crazy cliffhanger ending, but what does it all mean for us? Should we be like super careful with every contract, looking for traps and loopholes with a magnifying glass?
I wouldn't say paranoid, but this case definitely shows how important it is to really understand contracts. What seems like a small detail can have big consequences later.
So no more skimming and signing, huh?
Definitely not. Take your time, read carefully, understand what you're agreeing to. And it's not just about the words themselves, you know? Think about what the agreement actually means. What's everyone expecting? How are you talking to each other? Are you being clear? Or are you leaving things open to misinterpretation?
Yeah, good point. Being clear seems super important. Like with Market Street, not being clear about paragraph 34 really hurt them in the end.
Right. It shows that not saying something or even being vague can be just as bad as lying. If you know something the other side doesn't and it's important to the deal, you should be upfront about it.
So honesty really is the best policy, even in business.
A lot of the time, yeah. Remember, a contract should be good for both sides. It's not a competition to be the most clever. Building trust and working together can prevent a lot of problems down the road.
I like that. But let's be real. Not everyone has a lawyer to explain every little thing in a contract. What can our listeners do to protect themselves?
First things first, read the contract. Don't just skim it. Take the time to understand each part. If something seems confusing, ask questions.
What if you're still not sure?
If it's a really complicated contract or there's a lot at stake, talk to a lawyer. They can help you understand the details, see the risks, and make sure you're protected.
Good advice. Any other tips for avoiding these good faith problems?
Always document everything. Keep track of emails, letters, even phone calls. If something goes wrong, you'll have proof of what happened.
So you're prepared if things go south.
Exactly. A well-written contract is like a good fence. It sets clear boundaries and helps prevent problems. So when you're writing one, be clear and specific. Don't use jargon or confusing language. Make sure all the important terms are spelled out.
Be prepared, be specific.
Got it. Yep. And in the end, always remember that Judge Posner test. Would he see your actions as clever negotiation or as trying to trick someone? If you're not sure, it's better to be cautious and honest.
What would Judge Posner do?
I like that. I'll definitely remember that next time I'm looking at a contract.
Well, this deep dive into Market Street v. General Electric Pension Trust has been really interesting. We've learned about contracts, good faith, and even a bit about a famous judge.
It has, and hopefully our listeners have learned something that can help them with their own contracts.
I think they have. Thanks for being here. It's been great.
My pleasure.
And to everyone listening, remember, read those contracts carefully, be clear in your communication, and always act in good faith. Until next time, stay curious and stay informed.